Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Connecticut is Kara Bonatatibus. Kara is the head of product for Lextegrity, and we're going to be talking today about third-party risks, especially the auditing and monitoring of third-party relationships. Kara, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Great. Thanks so much, Adam, for having me.
Our pleasure. So let's begin. What are the ways in which companies should be overseeing third-party transactions from a monitoring and auditing perspective?
Sure. So there are actually a number of ways in which companies probably should be overseeing their third parties, and I would say it probably goes beyond monitoring or auditing, and probably a lot of companies are still just doing, you know, one or both, and mostly focused on upfront due diligence and perhaps conducting traditional audit type activities every couple of years or so. But given that third parties actually present one of the biggest risks for most companies, they probably should be doing more across the entire life cycle of a third party. So not just focused on the traditional upfront due diligence activities, but focused on how that third party is performing across the lifespan of the engagement all the way through offboarding. And that's where monitoring really comes into play. Auditing is typically something that happens every couple of years or so, and is typically focused on broader risks associated with a third party and not just necessarily like the highest risks associated with a third party.
So you looking can... deeper than usual.
For sure. You can also, the challenge with traditional auditing is, again, because it's often infrequent or done maybe every 2 or 3 years, maybe an annual basis. The challenge with traditional auditing practices is if you find something, you've now potentially let that activity go on for a year, 2 years, 3 years. But with monitoring, if you do that much more frequently, you can identify an issue earlier and take steps to correct it much earlier.
Yeah, definitely want to be on top of these things. Now, how have monitoring and auditing practices evolved, or how should they be evolving, including, you know, looking at who's doing this, frequency? You already mentioned every couple of years. Is that the right time frame, right, or is there others?
Sure. Yeah. No, I think there's probably a number of ways that they could evolve. I think with the advent of technology and the availability, greater use of and access of data, companies should be looking to evolve their monitoring and auditing practices based on, you know, having those resources available to them. So you can easily look at data on a regular, maybe even potentially daily or weekly basis, from a monitoring perspective. And again, you know, hone in on an issue much earlier than if you're waiting a couple of years. You can also use that data to inform what are truly higher risk activities or transactions. So looking for anomalies in the data or anomalies in the transaction, you know, for patterns of transactions, such as submitting invoices for amounts that are just under a particular threshold, or seeing split invoices or things like that, you can see those statistical anomalies in the data. There's also ways that auditing practices might want to consider evolving, given, again, the number of tools and solutions that are available to them. You know, traditional audit methods, aside from the frequency or infrequency, but they often employ sort of just a random selection of transactions to look at in detail. And using data, you can hone in on the higher risk transactions, and again, maybe focus on specific areas of high risk or specific types of transactions that may be more likely than not to be reflective of an issue.
The DOJ recently released some updated guidance for compliance programs, really evaluation criteria for prosecutors, but the compliance community, right, largely took that as guidance. Are there any good key takeaways about third-party auditing and monitoring there?
Absolutely. I think one thing to note is just the actual physically expanded number of times that third parties are actually referenced in the updated guidance from April. So the amount of focus on third party definitely increased. And then in terms of some of the more salient points in the guidance related to third parties, there's some specific focus on, again, applying more risk-based due diligence to its third-party relationship. So I mentioned before about traditional upfront due diligence being one of the ways in which companies mitigate third-party risk. The DOJ took it, you know, a little bit further and said you should be applying different types of due diligence activities depending on the risks that your third-party relationships raise. Other things that they've identified or mentioned in the guidance is checking to see if the third party is actually performing work. So again, this goes back to the point I mentioned before, which is really assessing third party activity across the entire life cycle. So it's one thing to focus initially and say, is this a legitimate third party? Do they have any initial red flags as part of the upfront due diligence? But you know, monitoring and overseeing the entire life cycle of the third party, and that includes performance. So are they actually doing what they were engaged to do? And then there is a specific reference to monitoring in the DOJ guidance. Prosecutors will assess whether the company has engaged in ongoing monitoring of their third party relationships. So again, I think just emphasizes some of the points I made earlier about trying to look across the third party relationship instead of at potentially more infrequent points of time.
Yeah, and frequency is obviously critically important. We've come back to it a couple of times now. So now, what are some of the practices that companies should and can implement that may address these rising expectations?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's still a place for auditing. I think, you know, the guidance itself references continuing to conduct audit activities. I think that probably should still be done by an independent, whether it's an internal auditing group or external auditing function that you bring in to conduct the audit. I think some of the specific items that the guidance itself references includes things like considering conducting an interview with third party itself. I think that this is something that's actually rarely done or perhaps done in a limited way. So you may have conversations with your third party about transactions that you've pulled for auditing purposes and perhaps limit that conversation to just the details of that transaction instead of having a more fulsome conversation with the third party about, again, the work that they're doing, the performance that they're acting with, et cetera. I think, again, you know, we've talked about monitoring, but continuous monitoring of actual third-party transactions can provide a lot of value. And ultimately, doing that on a more frequent basis, you can do things like identify risky transactions and create a workflow around it, or implement remediation or enhance controls. They may also inform the audit process. So, you know, I spoke earlier about potentially using data and information to inform the audit process instead of just the sort of traditional random sample selection. So your monitoring can inform your audit processes.
All right. So you outlined a lot of things are for organizations to be doing. Who should be actually doing this work?
Sure. So in terms of auditing, again, I think that there's probably the company should continue to conduct audits, either leveraging their internal audit function or an external auditing group that exhibits a level of independence from the rest of the organization. In terms of monitoring, I'm not sure that there actually is a right way or a wrong way. I've seen companies that conduct monitoring by individuals within a compliance or legal function, finance. Sometimes your operational team conducts a first level monitoring. Sometimes even the business is involved in initial monitoring, and then there's an escalation process to legal, compliance, or finance, depending on the type of monitoring that you're doing. I actually am a firm believer that compliance teams will have a much greater impact if they involve the business in some respect. So whether the business is actually conducting the monitoring, but could be involved in a number of ways. So receiving monitoring reports or asked to perform follow-up or remediation activities. I think that there's a lot of value in bringing the business along with your compliance colleagues.
Yeah, those are good points, including the fact that the more business unit is involved in this, the better they understand, A, what the compliance risks are, but two, probably do a better job of managing their own suppliers. Well, Kara, thank you so much for bringing those insights to us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and ATCA saying, I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.